Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sociologists often talk about the third place, or sometimes the third great place. The idea is that most people naturally have two great places already: home, where you live, and work or school, where you actually spend much of your day. The third place is the place where you choose to go, where you actually engage in being part of a community. When I was 16, my third great place was CBGB's. For me, the famously decrepit club in Lower Manhattan wasn't just about all the great bands who came out of the punk scene. It was also about sharing a space with other people who were interested in the same things as me, and who were just as afraid as I was of using the disgusting bathroom in the back. Good times. And those times are recreated now in a new film called CBGB. We'll hear from the film's director and from guitarist Cheetah Chrome from the punk band The Dead Boys. We've also got live music of a very different sort from the Icelandic songwriter, film composer, and producer Ólafur Arnalds. But back to the idea of the third great place. Traditionally, one of the most common third places is your local bar, which brings us quite neatly to today's first segment.
That's a magic number. Three. It's the magic number.
Time now for our regular feature that we call Pick Three, except today it's a Pick Three with a twist of lemon, lime, maybe a splash of soda. That's because today's Pick Three playlist comes with a drink pairing. Joining us with her selections of music and drink is Rosie Schapp. She writes the drink column for the New York Times Magazine and is author of the memoir Drinking with Men. Rosie Schapp, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So do your tastes in drink and music change with the seasons?
Absolutely. I often tell people that for me, autumn is about two things: brown liquor and creepy old folk songs.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
That's what I want. You know, once it's October especially, I kind of lock down at home, get a lot of reading and writing done, drink a lot of good whiskey, and listen to a lot of English folk rock.
So those two sort of go together. I mean, there's the great old English folk song about John Barleycorn.
Right, of course.
So are the malted barley family, is that autumn is the time for, like, beer and whiskey? And
I think definitely for whiskey, also for a brown ale or a dark ale, a good porter, and
all
lots
the things,
of sweaters.
The things that are too kind of heavy for the heat of the summer.
Correct. It's a heavy time, and I don't resist that at all.
So the first song that you've picked for us is by Jean Ritchie, American,
great American singer.
But man, did she have her finger on the pulse of, like, the old English and Scottish songs.
Sure. As I understand, as a Fulbright scholar, she studied.
Mm-hmm.
She studied these songs, and there are so many great versions of this song.
The song Lord Randall,
which I think many people are probably familiar with just reading about it in Catcher in the Rye, certainly from Bob Dylan riffing on it. And, you know, like so many traditional ballads, they're very different versions. I love Jean Ritchie's voice, and that's why I went with this one.
The original poem, as I've read it, is, you know, what's wrong with you, Lord Randall, my son? And, you know, he's getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
And by the end, it's turned out that she has poisoned him, and she's watching him die right in front of her.
Right, right. So it could be the mother who's this real,
as
my people say, this real yenta just asking question after question after question while this guy is dying. Or it's the stepmother whom he's returned from visiting and who's not so good eels he's eaten.
The eels,
or the
right.
beloved, as in this version.
I got eels baked or braked in brew or something like that.
You know, it kind of turned me off eel for a long time, this song.
And what do we drink when we listen to this old Scottish murder ballad?
You know, I think with Lord Randall, you could drink a few different things. But with Jean Ritchie singing it, a Kentucky girl, you got to drink some good Kentucky bourbon and make it a really strong one. So I'm recommending Wild Turkey's Rare Breed, which is more than 108 proof. It's strong stuff, but really delicious.
And neat, I hope?
Neat.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. We're speaking with Rosie Schapp. She's sharing a Pick 3 playlist and drinks. So break out the Wild Turkey Rare Breed, please, not the cheap stuff. And listen to this by Gene Ritchie.
Oh, where have you been, Lord Randall, my son? Oh, where have you been, my handsome young one? I've been to the wildwood, mother, make my bed soon. For I'm weary with hunting, and I fain would lie down. Where did you get dinner, Lord Randall, my son? Where did you get dinner, my handsome young man? I dined with my true love, mother, make my bed soon. For I'm weary with hunting, and I fain would lie down. What did you eat for your dinner, Lord Randall, my son? What did you eat for your dinner, my handsome young man? I had eels boiled in broth, mother, make my bed soon. For I'm weary with hunting, and I fain would lie.
That is the haunting voice of Gene Ritchie. The story of Lord Randall, that goes back centuries,
sure.
As does the Scottish tradition of making whiskey. And
right.
Now, this is your recommended drink here is the American cousins, bourbon, specifically Wild Turkey's Rare Breed, which at 108.6 proof is... You're only going to need a glass of that.
You're only going to need a glass. Yeah. I'm not going to stop you if you have one more.
Right. Now, you said to drink it neat, and Gene Ritchie, who is quite capable of accompanying herself on a dulcimer or anything, sings this kind of neat.
Exactly.
You know, naked, unadorned singing.
It doesn't need anything else, like a good whiskey.
Now, your column for the New York Times is called Drink.
Mm-hmm.
So... maybe this is an obvious question. I mean, what do you cover? I mean, have you done this before? Come up with playlists for things?
I often come up with playlists to accompany my columns. Probably about every other month, there's a playlist either right there in the magazine with the column or running online on the Times Magazine blog, The Sixth Floor. But it's so much fun for me, and I feel that music and drink can do a lot to improve each to improve the other.
All right. We're speaking with Rosie Schapp, the drink columnist for the New York Times Magazine and author of Drinking with Men, a memoir. She is sharing her Pick 3 playlist with us. So, again, autumn, a time for these kind of older folk songs, have a kind of gothic quality to them, and brown liquor. So
right.
Where do we go next?
We're going to a favorite of mine, both the song and the singer, The Poor Murdered Woman, sung by Shirley Collins when she was with the Albion Country Band. And this is a real reportage song. This is not as old as Lord Randall. We know it's from the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the event it depicts happened in 1834. And John, I should probably tell you that many years ago, when I started college, a long time ago, I wanted to be a folklorist. And somehow wound up being a journalist instead. But I think that's kind of given me a very warm feeling for these reporting kinds of ballads. They sort of bring that all together. But as with a tabloid, a ballad can sometimes distort a news story a great deal. I think this song is so interesting because as far as I know, it really does relate the facts of this very, very sad case. And the only real straying from a kind of journalistic ballad integrity is its, to me, really beautiful, deep sympathy for the subject that I think sets it apart from just a straight reporting ballad.
Right. So this is Shirley Collins.
What a great singer.
I mean, yeah.
And one of these voices, it took me a little getting used to.
Yes. She's a very high-pitched voice.
Yeah, and it cracks and crackles and does weird things, but I think all of that is just a testament to how much real feeling she has for everything she sings.
I know. How are we going to feel this? What are we drinking to get the full effect?
Well, with this, I think of Shirley Collins, even though she certainly traveled around America and knows American music very well. I think of her as somehow quintessentially English. There's a kind of It would take so long to completely unpack
this. I actually agree.
But there's something quintessentially English to me about her voice. And again, this is a straightforward song, so I think a good English ale. You just want a real English ale. And what I've got in front of me right now is a bottle of a favorite of mine called Wells Bombardier. And it was introduced to me by one of my favorite barmen in America, John Stoat, an Englishman who founded a wonderful bar upstate called The Man of Kent, which I wrote about in my book.
Right. All right, well, cheers.
Cheers.
Let's hear Shirley Collins and the Poor Murdered Woman.
It was Hanky the Squire, as I've heard men say, ride out your hunting on one Saturday. They hunted all day, but nothing they found but a poor murdered woman laid on the cold ground.
Great Shirley Collins and the song of The Poor Murdered Woman. Rosie Schapp sharing with us Pick 3 playlist and drinks to accompany. I'm out, so I need some
Let
more
me
of that,
refill you.
Because you do this.
I do this,
you,
yes.
You tend bar at South, which is in our mutual neighborhood, South
neighborhood
Park Slope.
In Brooklyn, yeah.
So what kind of music makes the best ambience for a bar? I mean, you wouldn't stay in a karaoke bar, would you?
Not very long,
yeah.
Particularly because if I started singing, it would drive everyone else away. You know, I notice my shift is a day shift. I can't, I'm too old to close a bar at 4 a.m. at this point in my life. My shift is from 2 to 9, and I tend to either start with jazz. I often start with Louis Armstrong,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes Fats Waller. And that sort of sets a nice daytime tone, I think.
Kind of a speakeasy thing.
Yeah, just low-key and mellow, but sometimes folky stuff, too, mm-hmm. Early in the day. And then I think if my regulars were going to sort of caricature what I play at night, they'd really point to two-tone. I play an awful lot of Madness in the specials. It just kind of keeps me awake and keeps me buoyant and cheerful, and everybody kind of enjoys it.
Okay. Now, Shirley Collins, that recording was with the Albion Country Band,
right.
Who also recorded as the Albion Dance Band,
right.
And who were kind of a splinter group off of the next band we're going
right,
to hear.
Right.
Fairport Convention.
Yeah.
The great and ill-starred Sandy Denny.
The great and ill-starred Sandy Denny, who I've been thinking about a lot lately. I'm writing an essay about her. And I think for many people, my first introduction and to others was Sandy singing the backups on Battle of Evermore.
The Led Zeppelin song,
right.
Yes.
And when I was a difficult teenage girl, you know, locking my bedroom door behind me and practicing tarot cards. That was a song I'd play over and over and over while I was burning incense and that kind of thing. And just that voice, I mean, it just doesn't sound like she doesn't. Many people have tried to sound like Sandy Denny.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name names, but no one does.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the quality of the voice, but the quality of expression, I think, completely sets her apart.
And the band wrote a lot of its own material, but with Renardyne.
Renardyne is also a very old song. Another weird thing I was into as a kid, I was kind of preoccupied with werewolves at a certain point.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Renardyne isn't a werewolf. He's a werefox.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe he's just a guy. Maybe he's completely a fox.
Whatever,
we don't know.
Whatever he is, he's bad news
he's
for the
bad
lady
news.
Singing the
he's
song.
A rake.
Yes.
We know that much.
Yeah.
That's the only thing we know for sure.
And what do we drink as we hear this? I got to say, I'm still on the Wells Bombardier here.
And there's nothing wrong with the Wells Bombardier. But I think any time we get a really heavy dose of the supernatural, obviously we reach for some absinthe.
Obviously,
John. In a great cocktail. One of the greatest cocktails in the world is the Sazerac, a famous New Orleans cocktail. Many bartenders favor it. There's a kind of alchemy, I think, ascribed to it that's, you know, I mean, it's a drink just like any other, but it's imbued with an almost metaphysical kind of property to people who love to make them and drink them. But here, I'm doing a variation on it and using a smoky scotch where normally rye mm-hmm. would be used. And that just gives it more of a sort of haze and fog and mystery.
All right. Well, there, Soundcheck listeners, there are instructions on how to make your own Sazerac, this version that Rosie Schaap is talking about, on our website at soundcheck.org. And let's hear the song that goes with it, Renardine from Fairport Convention.
One evening, as I rambled among the leaves so green, and he smiled to gaze upon her. Did that sly old Renardine.
That is Renardine, a classic recording from the English folk rock band Fairport Convention. Best enjoyed with a Sazerac, says Rosie Schaap, author of the drink column for the New York Times Magazine. But not any old Sazerac, but one that substitutes a smoky scotch whiskey for rye. And the full details on how you can do that are on our website at soundcheck.org. You said before, Rosie, music and drink, you know, the two of them, they go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
One complements the other. I can't imagine one without the other myself.
Nor can I, John.
So you're tending bar at South on Fifth Avenue in South Park Slope.
That's right. One shift a week.
One shift a week, just to keep your hand in.
Keeps me on my toes.
All right. This has been a lot of fun.
For me as well. Thank you so much.
Rosie Schaap, my guest on Soundcheck.
And if by chance you should look for me,
next, I relive some of my very first drinking experiences, what I remember of them, at the legendary club called CBGB's. We'll talk with the director of the new CBGB movie and with guitarist Cheetah Chrome of the punk band The Dead Boys next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. CBGB was supposed to be a home for country, bluegrass, and blues, but instead it became, famously, ground zero for the punk rock movement in the mid-70s. and a place where the 16-year-old me could feel like I'd discovered a whole new world, and it wasn't just because I was able to get served at the bar. Now, the legendary club is being brought to life on the silver screen in a new movie simply called CBGB. Joining me here in the studio is the director of that film, Randall Miller. Randall, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining me is Cheetah Chrome, guitarist for the punk band The Dead Boys, which played regularly at CBGB's back in the day.
How you doing?
Good. Randy, let me start with you. You know, CBGB's, and we did call it CBGB's with the S.
Yeah.
Was such a special place and a unique place and has remained so in the memories of people like me. How daunting was it, knowing that, to take on this project?
Well, I mean, you know, you're always going to have people with their memories and the experiences they had, but I thought it was important. There's a generation of kids that don't know how it started and where it started. And even myself, I didn't really know the beginning, what happened in the very beginning. You know, the Dead Boys, Television, Ramones, Blondie, all those great bands. You want to sort of give them, you know, give them due, see how they started. And there's so many unknown bands, too, that
right.
that we really sort of go into. And that was important to us.
So, Cheetah, when you first heard about the project, I mean, you have all those memories. Were you skeptical?
A bit at first, you know. I was kind of like, well, I mean, first, I mean, how the heck they're going to pull that off, you know? Because, I mean, there's, what, 30,000 bands that played there and over how many years? But as I found out, you know, what period it was going to cover and, you know, kind of the scope of the whole thing, I talked to Jody and Randy. I saw their hearts were in the right place and they really wanted to make a movie that was going to be fun and you know, just keep the scene alive for, you know, mm-hmm. for a new generation.
When Cheetah mentions Jody, yeah. that's...
That's my wife, my producer, Jody Savin. But we interviewed, I mean, more than 100 people. We talked to Cheetah quite a bit and John Holmstrom and so many of the people involved.
The guy who founded Punk Magazine.
Exactly. Right? And throughout the movie, there's like a sort of a subplot of the movie is sort of the creation of Punk Magazine and how that sort of visual style became part of the scene as well.
It's a sort of a framing device
yeah.
that takes us from one part of the film to the other. But so I guess the first thing you had to do, Cheetah says there were 30,000 bands
yeah.
that you mentioned at the end of the movie. You couldn't cover all of the history of CBGB and all those bands. So basically, this movie focuses on, this is the...
It's the beginning.
The creation myth.
Yeah, it's, you know, 73 through about 78, 79. We pick it up a few years later, but we sort of try to tell the beginning.
Well, in this scene, Alan Rickman, who actually looks like Hilly Crystal...
He's amazing, yeah.
The founder of CBGB's. In this early scene from the film, Hilly is talking to his right-hand man, Merv Ferguson, who's played by the actor Donal Logue.
I was thinking 50-cent beers and topless waitresses like that joint down on...
The music will do it all for us.
You start playing that disco I'm gone.
Country and blues.
In New York City.
This club's gonna be different.
Country and blues.
Country, bluegrass, blues.
I should have never left my other job.
So that, yeah. that was the plan.
Yeah.
In one sense, he was right when Hilly says in the film, it's going to be something different.
Yes, well, yep. It was definitely something different. I don't think he ever really got any. Did you ever get any country bands down there when you were there? Maybe Alan Jackson was the only person who showed up.
I don't think anybody really you would call no. country. I mean, no. you know, Hilly get out his guitar and play a song now and then, you know. But that was about as close as the guy that I saw.
Now, Randy, when you do a feature film like this, I mean, there have been other attempts at doing kind of musical biopics. There was the movie 54 about Studio 54 and, you know, Control about Ian Curtis and Joy Division
yeah.
and things like that. Some of these have gotten mixed reviews because it is such a, I mean, you're talking about facts that can be fact-checked and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, you do try and find the truth in everything. You are going to have to ellipse some places because you're trying to tell a dramatic story. You know, like the Dead Boys, we tell their story intermixed a bit with the Ramones and a bit with some of the other bands. Now, I think the Ramones at that time were already gone, but we try to sort of blend them together because you want to make it the most dramatic it can be. But we don't, you know, we say at the very beginning of the movie, we say, you know, this is mostly true. Because it is mostly true.
Right, right. Now, you know, I have to say, I, you know, on the one hand, I was grinning my way through this movie because the soundtrack is amazing.
Unbelievable, yeah.
On the other hand, I'm also checking off, like, nope, that's not how that happened. No, that did well, that wasn't there. And I didn't drive.
you know? You were too stoned to drive?
No, I didn't drive. I didn't have a license until I was 40.
Oh, wow. That's
you're talking, Cheeto, about the scene where you, the dead boys the truck, are on. Yeah. You're driving the truck.
Yeah, no, they never would let me know.
But, you know, then at the like the last line in the closing credits, you actually refer to something, you know, one of the big, you know, inauthenticities.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop never performed with Blondie at CBGB's. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, all right, well, that's kind of punk.
Yeah.
That's kind of a punk attitude.
We had to have Iggy in there because Iggy is basically the godfather of punk, so to speak, or people do say that. And so we had to have him in there in some way, shape, or form. So we took that liberty.
But you were able to clear rights for a whole lot of great
65
songs.
Tracks in this movie. It's crazy. That's right. You know, Brad Rosenberger, our other partner, music partner, he really, you know, went a long way and made that happen.
Well, we're talking, of course, about the film CBGB. The movie premiered at this week's CBGB Music and Film Festival, appropriately. Here in New York, hits theaters nationwide on Friday, and the film soundtrack is out now. I'm speaking with Randall Miller, the director and co-writer, and Cheetah Chrome from the band The Dead Boys. Hilly Crystal actually managed you guys.
Oh, yeah. We were a big part of his legend.
Yeah. And now, you know, I mentioned how, you know, some of the actors actually, whoever the guy is who plays young Tom Verlaine from television.
Max, he's great. As soon as he
walks on into the bar, it's like, oh my God, it's young Tom Verlaine.
Yeah.
You are played, Cheetah, by Rupert Grint, best known as Ron Weasley from the Harry Potter movies. What was that like for you to see your young, like 22-year-old self on the screen like that?
It was pretty neat. I mean, when I first walked in, he was, you know, up there playing guitar. And, you know, just to see him up there playing and all that, that was a little spooky. But it was even spookier walking past him on the set. Like, I just happened to look over, and there he was, like, over there. And I'd be like, and I'd do a double take. One time he was sitting in a chair doing an interview, and it was, you know, with a dog collar and all that. It was like seeing myself, you know, 20 years ago, you know, I used to do interviews like that, you know. And it was very strange. I mean, he was a really good kid, and we really got along well. And,
so did you at some point walk up to him and say, do you know who I am?
No, he knew. He saw me coming. He was kind of like,
Well, the story of the Dead Boys, managed by CBGB's founder, Hilly Crystal, is one of the subplots, Randy, that runs through the film. And the soundtrack includes, you know, not just songs by Talking Heads and The Dolls and Television, but, of course, this song from the Dead Boys. Oh, that was a big song on the scene in the mid-70s. The Dead Boys playing at CBGB's a lot. Hilly Crystal, who founded the bar, was their manager. The song is Sonic Reducer, and it is in the soundtrack to the film CBGB, directed and co-written by Randall Miller, who's here, and Cheetah Chrome, guitarist for The Dead Boys, which you actually have an on-screen role. It wasn't just...
Yes, yeah. I play a New York cabbie who doesn't like punk rock. And, you know, I actually kind of identify with him now. No, I still love my punk.
So who is the audience for this? Who is this aimed at?
I mean, this is a movie that it's a lot of fun. You know, it's R-rated, but it's a lot of fun. It's a movie for people who want to know about this music, who want to feel, you know, either go back to this place and have fun with this place. But it's not just for, like, you know, for you know, for older people that know the scene, it's for everybody, because it's a movie that takes you in this sort of journey, this sort of funny journey through this world. And these guys were, I mean, they were kind of a gas. You know, punk was funny, but funny in kind of a hardcore way.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think appeals to audience today.
I think the sense of humor was like something that definitely got missed, you know, at the time. Everybody thought it was all, you know, nihilism and violence and all that. It was mostly about humor. It was mostly about ridiculing, you know, society and what was going on.
I mean, right. They were punks after all. They were like making fun of people.
I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of tact about our sense of humor, but, you know, it was, or good taste, but, you know,
That was also part of the point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, you know, in terms of the look and the sound of the period, CBGB's is gone.
Yeah.
But there are parts of the set that look like you actually got the notorious toilets. And,
yeah, I mean, what was really interesting, when we decided to make the movie, we got to know the folks who actually are putting on the CBGB Festival. And they had, in storage in Williamsburg, they had the bar, the doors, the toilets, everything. So when we built our set, we had that all shipped to us in a storage container. And I remember, like, opening up, you know, the bar, and it was there. Well, and the front doors had these, you know, front doors and bars will have a hydraulic system. Well, they had bungee cords.
Yeah.
I mean, these were the doors.
Yeah, and Hilton was actually thinking of taking the place out to Vegas when it closed. You know,
right,
when it closed.
I
think
that,
didn't even have to keep the stage.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing was...
The stage was someplace, yeah.
Yeah, there were pieces of speakers. There were speakers with stickers, your guys' stickers on them.
Yeah.
But the funniest one was when there was a scene where Hilly was sitting there, Alan was sitting there, and he goes to open the desk drawer, and he pulls out this deli menu, and there's, like, you know, circled the matzo ball soup and what he was going to have for the day. I mean, this stuff is vital. This was really cool. It was in the set. You know, we used it. So that makes it cool, I think.
Well, but then there's also, you know, there's a modern subway car that appears in a couple of shots. So for people who are going to nitpick, there are nits to pick.
Oh, and they're out there, trust me.
They're there, you know. I mean, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge just looks a little different than it did back then, you know.
That's true. but, you know, the neighborhood, where did you film this?
Because we shot in a combination of, believe it or not, you know, Georgia and here. And New York. So what we did is we built this club on a soundstage in Georgia, and then walking on the street, he'd come out of the club, he'd turn the corner in the Bowery or in Elizabeth or different places. But you can't. We're not. You know, I wasn't making a gigantic movie, so I couldn't afford to put cars all the way up and down the street. I could do little corners, little pieces. So we had to be very judicious about where we were going to do. Now, obviously, the subway cars. You know, we had to steal those shots, you know.
Right, right.
So, you know, you can't pick up a subway car and move it, you know. We used what we had, which I think is punk, too. That's the authenticity of it, just sort of like being there and doing it, you know.
So now, with a young cast who, you know, grew up after CB's, you know, salad days in the 70s, early 80s. I mean, I know the club continued, but I mean, you know, the moment where it really was an epicenter. How do you explain to them... what they're doing and who they're portraying? And
well, I mean, there's so many videos now because of YouTube. There's so many of these great sort of, you know, some are great quality, some aren't, but they're amazing. You know, there's videos of these guys, of the Dead Boys, you know, of Stiv, like, hanging himself.
Yeah.
There's all this stuff that's on, you know, YouTube now, which there must have been people that were taking video. And there's video of the Ramones, there's video of Blondie. And then you talk to as many people as you can and try and sort of amass a story, you know, to try and make it feel as authentic as it can be. But the music always lives on, and the energy always lives on. So it's just capturing that energy and that essence. That's what's important.
Rupert told me that mostly he used the videos to get my part right, because you know, we never had a chance to talk really before. I was on set with him, and he had it down before he ever met me.
He is pretty he's a scary looking guy when he comes on screen for the first time with his dog collar and the wide eyes.
The first time I heard him talk, I said, "Okay, he's not gonna have any problems." He just did a great job. I mean, just amazing. I'm so, you know, flattered and honored that
he had your mumble down too.
That's my one piece
Cleveland
of advice.
Mumble
was,
thing,
you know. I said, he goes, "What?" Oh, I said, "How you doing with the voice?" He goes, "Well, you know, it's got an American accent." And I said, "Well, you know, if you just mumble," he goes, "Well, that's what I've been doing."
And Cheetah Chrome, you are releasing your first ever solo EP
called Solo.
And Cheetah Chrome playing at the CBGB Music and Film Festival tomorrow, Thursday, October 10th at Bowery Electric. And the film, CBGB, opening nationwide on Friday, October 11th.
And then it goes wider the following week.
And the film soundtrack?
The film soundtrack is out now.
All right.
Everywhere.
And you know, includes not just some of the CB's artists, but people like Iggy Pop and the MC5.
It has MC5. It has...
The proto-punks.
Yeah. It even has some cool stuff from Blondie. It has a new track from Blondie, which is really cool.
Yeah.
They re-recorded Sunday Girl. And that's on the soundtrack. And our friends the Dead Boys.
Yes.
The band the Dead Boys, part of the story of CBGB's. We've been speaking with Cheetah Chrome, the guitarist for that band, and with Randall Miller, the director and co-writer of the new movie CBGB. Guys, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
Hey, I saw your guy with a different girl. Looks like he's in another world. Run and hide, Sunday girl. Hurry up, and wait. I stay away all weekend. Still I'm awake. I got the blues. Please come.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Tomorrow, we'll announce the winner of our Remix the Mayor Challenge, where we ask you to turn the voices of mayors past into song. For the final decision-making, I'll be joined by our guest judges, the comedian and writer Julie Klausner, and the remixer Evan Gregory of the Gregory Brothers. But before we get to the winner tomorrow, we've been highlighting some of the other submissions, and this time around, we're looking at remixes that are not in the running. The ones that we've had to disqualify. And joining me in the studio with the remixes that won't make it to the final round is Soundcheck producer Greta Cohn. Hi, Greta.
Hi, John.
So who are we knocking off the list here?
We are knocking three remixes out of the running. We start with one by The Hitmaker. It's called Too Much Booty. And the second we heard it, we recognized something pretty familiar.
What is that?
It's a sample from the song Apache, recorded by the incredible Bongo Band. And one of the rules of this challenge was all original material, and we immediately knew this was not.
I mean, this has been used so many times by so many people over the years. It wasn't hard for us to figure out where this came from.
That is too much. That is too much. That is too much booty. That is too much booty.
So the Hitmaker gets ousted for using
Apache,
the most sampled break in hip-hop history.
Yes.
Okay. Too Much Booty, the name of that entry that is no longer entered in our Remix the Mayor Challenge. Now, I had to disqualify one. After really enjoying this remix by Velocity Raptor, also called Too Much Booty, and also featuring the same clip from Fiorello LaGuardia, Velocity Raptor made the dreadful mistake of telling us his real name, which turned out to be my cousin's son. So, Colin, it's a great remix. I'm sorry, but you, Velocity Raptor, are disqualified. Velocity Raptor and Too Much Booty featuring Fiorello LaGuardia. All of these are on our website, soundcheck.org, so people, Greta, can hear all
people
of them.
People can hear them.
Even these disqualified ones. It was just, you know, if our judges had picked this as the winner and he turned out to be a cousin of mine, it just would have looked weird.
A little too close to
home.
Yeah.
What else? What else have we disqualified?
The last entry we've had to disqualify is by Hazen Chat Music. It's called I Got Nothing. Why don't we hear it?
Love inside my heart.
What do you think, John?
Where's the mayor?
That's exactly why we disqualified this song. There was zero use of our mayor clips, and that was also
sort of the point.
The point of the challenge.
Yeah. So Hassan Chat Music just sent us a song.
He sent us a song. Up to you. If you like it, check it out at soundcheck.org. You can hear the whole thing. Let us know what you think. But unfortunately, you, Hassan Chat Music, are disqualified.
Well, at least he had the good sense to call his song I Got Nothing.
Exactly.
No remixed mayors in that entry, so these have been disqualified. Tomorrow we'll find out who the winner of our Remix the Mayor challenge is. Greta, thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Up next, some live music from the Icelandic songwriter, film composer, and producer Ólafur Arnalds. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It might surprise you to learn that the man behind this music started his career as a drummer for hardcore bands in his native Iceland. But for the last several years, Ólafur Arnalds has taken his sound in a decidedly different direction. His haunting compositions have been called everything from neoclassical to indie pop, and film and TV producers have flocked to the 26-year-old for musical scores. His latest album is called For Now I Am Winter. Ólafur Arnalds and his band joins me here in the studio. Here's a song called Near Light, live on Soundcheck. That is music from the Icelandic composer and pianist Ólafur Arnalds at our piano and also handling the electronics, Viktor Árnason playing the violin, and Ruben Kodaly playing the cello live here in the Soundcheck studio. They'll be joined by singer Arnór Dahn in just a moment. But Ólafur, good to have you with us on Soundcheck.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Beautiful new album called For Now I Am Winter, but that song, Near Light, that's from your 2011 record, right?
Yeah, that's from a record that I did in my living room and appropriately called it Living Room Songs.
And the story goes that as you finished each song, instead of waiting to release the whole album, you would put them up on YouTube.
Yeah, I challenged myself to do a song every day. I did the same idea in 2009, but this time we actually videotaped the whole process and we released them as kind of live videos from my living room.
All right. Well, now that we have you, Ólafur, here in our Soundcheck studio, we have the complete set of Arnalds because your cousin Olaf was here. She sang a set of songs for us earlier in the year. So did you both grow up in musical families?
We grew up pretty close, there was always music at our house, or both our houses, and on family get-togethers, we would play music. Olaf would usually sing, I play the guitar or piano, and there would be like a group singing on Christmas and stuff.
And what kind of music was it that you had in the house growing up?
I grew up with the Beatles and a lot of classical music, basically. Uh-huh. My parents listened to classical music a bit.
So what did they think when their teenage son started playing drums in hardcore bands there in Iceland?
Well, they didn't complain, but, you know, but that's because they're nice people, you know. I kind of rebelled against the whole classical thing. I wasn't interested in it at all. But my brother was listening to rock music, so I kind of grew up with more of his music, like Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that got me into drumming, and then I went kind of deeper into more punk stuff.
And then how did you come out the other side? Because, you know, if for a guy who was trying to avoid classical music, there's a very classical sound to a lot of this.
Yeah, well, I guess two things. My grandmother always made me listen to Chopin, and she kind of force-fed me with Chopin for a while. And in the end, I just started liking it, I guess. But also, there was a year when we lived in Canada and I didn't have any friends. I watched a lot of movies, and I got really interested in film scoring.
Uh-huh. Now, there is a very cinematic quality to much of this new record, as there has been to your older music as well. Are you thinking in terms of scenes and stories as you're writing these pieces?
No, not when I'm writing, but often when I listen back to it or when I start thinking about it afterwards, that those scenes come to my mind just like they do with a listener. But I think writing music is just about the music itself. It's not about love and life or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just about compiling some notes and tones and sounds.
Although this new record, For Now I Am Winter, has a lot of actual songs with lyrics. So at that point, what does that do to the songwriting process?
Well, the lyrics also came afterwards. I think Arnór wrote the lyrics, actually, and he wrote them after listening to my songs, basically.
Okay.
So the lyrics are also just an interpretation, one person's or two persons in this case, interpretation of the songs. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, people have clearly responded to that cinematic aspect of your music. The movies The Hunger Games and Looper both used some of your songs. And now you're actually writing for this British TV series, right? What's it called, Broadchurch?
Yeah, I'm the kind of composer for Broadchurch, so I do all the music in that. They told me when they hired me that the reason for why they hired me was not because they thought I could do something that they wanted. They just wanted exactly what I was already doing. Mm-hmm. So that was great for me. They gave me complete freedom and just told me to be as bold as I wanted to be. So that was great. You don't get that very often in mainstream television.
No.
They said, like, the weirder and crazier it is, the better.
Yeah. They awesome. Filmed that in Dorset, right?
They
in
did,
the west of England.
Yeah.
It's like
it's really sunny.
God's green earth.
Yeah. It's such a dark story. but it happens in the middle of summer in like the greenest place on earth. And that's kind of a thing in the music as well, to find that contrast, to kind of bring that darkness. So like when I first watched the episode without music, it was just, it looked so happy, you know. So it was kind of my job to
bring a
make
dark.
The story work in that sunny environment.
Okay. Olafur Arnalds is here with his band. Let's add Arnór Dahn to the collection of instrumentalists that we heard already, and listen to a live performance of the title track from Olafur Arnalds' latest record called For Now I Am Winter, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That is the title track of the latest album by the Icelandic composer and pianist Ólafur Arnalds. He and his band playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. Ólafur at our piano and handling the electronics. Arnór Dan singing. Ruben Cordeli playing cello. Victor Ornason playing the violin. I just love this new record. For Now I Am Winter is the latest from Ólafur Arnalds. And to you and the band, thank you so much for coming in and playing for us today.
Thanks for having us.
You can listen to another song from Ólafur Arnalds and watch video of the band as well, recorded here in our studio on our website, soundcheck.org. Tomorrow on the show, it's an alt-hip-hop supergroup. Deltron 3030 is rapper Del the Funky Homo Sapien, Kid Koala, and producer Dan the Automator. They've got a new album out called Event 2, and they'll be here with me to play some of it live. And we wrap up our Remix the Mayor Challenge with our judges, Julie Klausner and Evan Gregory, who will pick their favorites. That'll do it for Soundcheck today. Thanks to Marco Benevento for his piece Eagle Rock, which serves as our Soundcheck theme music. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.